Hi, I'm Howard Hu. Thank you, Gilles, for the invitation, and my greetings to all of you, including the Dean of Medicine, who had to leave this morning. Perhaps we'll get to see him later today. Gilles pointed out correctly that ours is a relatively new school of public health, and this is in the setting of a university, a great university, McGill, which has this big question in front of them. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about our school, but then I'd like to return to this question about what's the role of public health schools in the 21st century, and try to do that within 10 minutes. So as you heard from Michelle, our school of public health was one of the original Rockefeller Foundation schools of public health, created in 1927. It was a school of hygiene created by James Fitzgerald, who was a leader in vaccine and anti-toxin development in Canada. It quickly became a leader in terms of laboratory science, nutrition, public health nursing, the nascent science of epidemiology, and one of its main assets was the Connaught Laboratories, which was commissioned to create antitoxin for the entire Canadian Army during the First World War, was where Banting and Best discovered insulin and won the Nobel Prize. But then the history of the school takes some interesting turns. The Connaught Laboratories was recognized as a moneymaker for the university, and the university in its wisdom took it away from the School of Public Health. Then eventually the Connaught Laboratories was sold and became Sanofi, Pasteur, Canada, one of the leading manufacturers of vaccines worldwide. Canada started, of course, its single-payer system, and the Canadian physicians began to invest in primary care, which is a wonderful development for public health. But in the 1970s, in fact, the School of Medicine and the university commissioned no less than three external committees to figure out what to do with the School of Public Health, because in fact there was a sense that it wasn't needed. And in fact, there's a two-volume history written about this, commissioned by the Canadian Public Health Association meeting. I didn't find it until I arrived in Toronto, by the way, in 2012. I was born in New York City, just as a digression, from parents who emigrated from Shanghai. I did all my medicine and public health training in Boston, was on the faculty at the Harvard School of Public Health on the Brigham Women's Hospital for 16 years, and then went to the University of Michigan and then Toronto in 2012. So in 1975, the school was disbanded, and the elements were brought into the medical school. And the rationale that was given, was reviewed in this two-volume history, is that, number one, the single-payer system, we no longer have to worry so much about health systems not being able to deliver care to people who are uninsured. Number two, antibiotics are about to conquer all of infectious disease. Number three, both Canada and the U.S. have just declared war on cancer. It'll be done in 10 years. Prophetic words? But what was really interesting about the two-volume history is that this author was himself a bit of a sociologist and interviewed about 200 people to sort of get a sense of the underlying dynamics. And one of the undercurrents that was most important was that the university and the medical school felt that the public health school was a hotbed of radicals. This is 1975, right? And therein lies a really important lesson, because public health needs to embrace social science as part of what it does. It's a key to its success. But therein lies some threats and dangers. It took the SARS crisis and a number of other Canadian public health crises to lead to the National Commission, chaired by our then Dean of Medicine, David Naylor, to lead to the renaissance of public health in Canada. It's a story most of you know much better than I. And in 2008, as the school was being prepared to be reestablished, a young man walked into President David Naylor's office at that time, unsolicited, not a graduate of the University of Toronto, he's a graduate of UBC, and declared his interest in health systems and the health systems of the future. This young man was Paul Dalla-Lana. He owned a company that built health systems on primary care health campuses around Ontario, and he committed the $24 million to start the school. And then the school began. This is a school that I've had the privilege of leading the last 2.5 years. The university now understands that it's not your usual single department faculty in the university. It's something different. It's not only that the donors don't come from the alumni pool. In fact, we used to joke about, as a physician getting your MPH from Harvard, this is the one graduate school that guaranteed you made less coming out of graduate school than going into it. But in fact, this is a school that was capturing the imagination of the undergrads and the graduates because they were tackling the big issues of the day. In 2013, we became our own independent faculty. This last year, we moved the Institute for Health Policy Management and Evaluation into the school. This past December, another non-graduate of the school, Michael Dan, donated $10 million to create our new Institute for Indigenous Health. And then in our Global Health Summit in December, Paul Dalla-Lana committed to doubling his gift to the school. So we feel very privileged, but again, as Jim said, this is a golden age for public health. It's not just individual donors. It's the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. It's the money that comes out of development. It's the interest worldwide, students and the headline issues of the day, whether they really understand it's public health or not, they will know that, in fact, this is the kind of school where you need to get the education and skills to attack those problems. Now, in terms of vision of where public health schools can go, let me just give you an example, and I'm sorry the dean isn't here. Two papers were published by our faculty over the last year that illustrate what public health schools' mission is all about. One was written by Tony Miller and Cornelia Barnes, and it described the results of a 25-year mortality study cited as the most cited paper in the British Medical Journal, which showed that, in fact, annual mammography didn't really increase survival time. And it really questioned again what we really know about screening. And in fact, there's a substantial percentage of screening that led to unnecessary operations because, in fact, they were false positives. The second was written by Prabhat Jha and his team, published in the New England Journal, cited as one of the 100 most influential papers ever published by the journal. It was a study using big data from around the world, economics, policy, showing that, in fact, global taxation policy on tobacco was the single most effective means of reducing smoking rates worldwide. If that isn't high impact, but also representing where public health intersects with policy, with behavior, and improves health worldwide, I don't know what is. That's the kind of science we want to be able to do, but as Michelle said, this is multidisciplinary at its core. This is the kind of stuff that you can't just have individual scientists in their bench labs. You have to develop collaborations all around the university, and it really requires critical mass and recognition and administrative tools. Now, from our view, there's some substantial reasons why Canadian schools of public health can lead the world on some things. First of all, universal health coverage and deep investments in primary care do give you a place where you can attack this question of the sustainable health system of the future that you simply can't. And my apologies to Jim and my colleagues in the U.S., but now when I look back at the country where I was born, I think of it as a developing country because of where it still needs to go with a universal coverage system. Second, we have cities that are some of the most multi-ethnic in the world. You're living in one of them. Toronto's another. Where we can lead And what is the healthy city of the future? Part of it is because in Canadian public health, there are deep investments made in leadership in our institutions that are government institutions and our NGOs. Dr. Rochon is a beautiful example of making the transition between universities and governments that allows us to have our levers on collaborators, not just faculty, but collaborators who work on investments on how we develop innovations in health system thinking. And then Canada has a different position in the world. It was drove home when some of our faculty were doing some really leading research on public health and the Gaza refugee camps in the Palestinian community. Not an easy, accessible place for our American colleagues, but a Canadian passport gives you an entree where it's hard to go for others. These are just some examples of why I'm delighted to be in Canada and to work with our colleagues on strengthening the Canadian academic public health scene, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens here in McGill.